Hello and welcome back to the Rural Horticultural Society's Gardening Podcast. As regular listeners know, here at the RHS we're passionate about gardens, gardening and all things green. Each of our fortnightly podcasts is packed with practical seasonal advice, features and interviews with people who share our passion for plants. So whether you're a gardening expert or horticultural novice, in our podcast there's something to interest everyone. My name's Tony Dickerson and I'm one of the team of horticultural advisors based here at RHS Garden Wisley in Surrey. Coming up later on, wonderful watering holes for wildlife, how to design the perfect pond for gardens, small and large. But first, one of the big attractions for visitors at Wisley at this time of year is the spectacular exhibit of butterflies in the glasshouse. Hundreds of colourful exotic insects take to the air and mingle with the tropical plants and flowers to create a breathtaking display of natural beauty. We went to explore the flora and fauna on display this year.
My name's Greg Omden. I'm a horticulturalist in the tropical section of the glasshouse. Between January and March, we run our butterfly event from the 14th of January through to the 5th of March. During that time, it's my job to take care of the butterflies, hatch them out, and make sure they have a good life here at Wisley. So we're currently standing in the gallery area of the glasshouse, just looking inside the puparians we've got here. So the puparians can hold around 300 pupae, and all the different species that are in there will hatch out at different times. So sometimes you'll come in, there'll be one hatched out, and other times you'll come in, like yesterday, I came in, there were 85. So that was one big lot to put out in display. So we've got a range of about 50 different species here at Wisley. Currently at the moment we've got some of the owl butterflies, which are one of the biggest butterflies we've got in the display. We've also got some leaf wings, which have really interesting pupae cases. One of my particular favourites is the tree nymph, which is almost kind of a gold looking pupae case, which is quite interesting. So the butterflies usually live roughly between 3 to 4 weeks. It obviously depends on species. Some of the, like the small glass wings, they'll live up to 6 months. So here we are at the puparians in the glasshouse. These are basically wooden boxes which have a heater at the base. Then there's capillary matting put over the top, which is kept constantly moist to keep humidity up. The humidity level's got to be around 80% humidity and between 25 and 28 degrees. So when we receive the pupae, they come in the post, kind of lined up in polystyrene boxes. And then we glue them onto bamboo canes using Copidex glue, as it's the only non-toxic glue. So it doesn't affect the butterflies as they hatch out. So then the bamboo canes are placed onto, we've got like hooks within the puparium. They're placed onto there, and we allow enough space for each butterfly to hatch out and kind of lay its wings as it hatches out. Well, the actual hatching is like between 2 and 3 hours to kind of hatch out, but from sticking them to the butterflies going in display is about 3 to 4 days. One of my favourite species this year is the jazzy leaf wing. It's fairly simple looking inside. It's kind of a dark blue with a white stripe. But when the wings are shut, it's almost camouflaged. It has quite a crinkly edge to the wing as well. It's quite an unusual one, and they're quite small. So that's a good one to look out for.
Hello, my name's Christopher Young, and I'm team leader for the glasshouse here at RHS Garden Wisley. We've got a temperate and tropical glasshouse here, 15 metres tall, and we grow everything from tree ferns to cacti to succulents to large bananas set in this kind of magnificent landscape. Our team is 6 horticulturalists working with me, and from day-to-day tasks involve anything from care and cultivation of the largest specimens, watering, potting, and growing new plants for our future displays. Obviously, winter is the ideal time to carry out things like glasshouse cleaning, to optimise kind of growing conditions for the following spring, clean glass, ensuring the glasshouse is kind of swept out throughout to reduce any chance of pest and disease levels kind of building up. If you're overwintering things like tender plants, it's kind of ideal to keep checking them periodically. Make sure things like fallen leaves or yellow leaves are removed, as this will reduce the chances of pathogens such as botrytis or grey mould from taking hold. In warmer glasshouses, sometimes scarab flies, or fungus gnats as they're known, can be a real issue over the winter months. They kind of thrive in like humid glasshouses. So like ventilation and drainage is important for the plants. So if you find they're becoming a problem, use things like sticky traps to attract the adults, but also like raising plants to increase drainage would improve things. At the moment, the highlight in the temperate glasshouse is our aloe collection. It's all coming into flower at the moment. Possibly my favourite has to be Aloe Spendimissima, which is looking absolutely spectacular. They look like red fireworks just exploding, erupting from a rosette of leaves. Aloe Spendimissima is about 1.5 meters. But some of them obviously vary from being quite dwarf all the way up to like tree aloes. So at the moment, our citrus collection, which many people grow at home in their own conservatories, it's just starting to come into flower. Our plants are covered in lovely white flowers, really heavily scented, which is perfect on these kind of sunny days. For me and my team, the wonders of working under glass is that on these really cold, frosty days in January, February, we can escape into the warmer tropical climes of our glasshouse.
The glasshouse team here at RHS Garden Wisley in Surrey. The Butterflies event runs until the 5th of March. See rhs.org.uk/Wisley Butterflies. I'm Tony Dickerson and you're listening to the RHS Gardening Podcast. Although it's much colder outside than in the heated comfort of the glasshouse, the gardens at Wisley in winter are full of beautiful and surprising sights and scents. My colleague Jenny Bowden met up with the head of the formal garden team, Gemma Neach, to go on a guided tour of some of the seasonal highlights.
So I'm here today with Gemma Neach, who is team leader on formal ornamental, and I've also got with me Verity Bradbury, whom we'll be speaking to in just a few minutes, about winter highlights in the garden. So first of all, Gemma, what is your role here in Wisley?
So I'm the team leader and I have 6 full-time members of staff, some volunteers, students and an apprentice and a specialist student. And between us, we look after all the formal sections of the garden. So this includes when you walk in as a visitor through the main entrance, that area around the laboratory, the canals, the walled gardens, up through top terrace, up to the mixed borders, the Bowes Line Rose Garden, Bowles Corner and the Model Gardens.
Wow, that's an incredible patch to look after. And which are your favourite parts of the job?
I enjoy getting out and working with the team when I can, and I also like teaching, and I just like the job in general, the varied, having some office work to do and having teaching and then being outside and doing the practical side of it as well.
Cool. And so in your area, what are the kinds of things that visitors can be looking out for at this time of year?
At the moment, the mixed borders are looking really good. A lot's died back. We've left structural seed heads because they look really interesting, such as the Cortaderia, which is pampas grass. There's some nice Monarda bergamot seed heads that are looking really architectural. So that's a good spot to visit.
And what are the next jobs on the agenda? What are you going to be looking at in the near future, job-wise?
The next big job we've got is rose pruning. So we've got a really large rose garden and we're going to be looking at starting to prune all the roses in February. We're also cutting a lot of the herbaceous plants back and we're going to go and collect some birch and use that for staking in February as well.
So, Verity, what's your area? What area do you look after here at Wisley?
So I'm the team leader for the herbaceous team, and that covers the glasshouse landscape, the wild garden and 7 acres, which is also home to the winter walk.
Well, and the winter walk is quite a new area, so tell us what visitors can look forward to if they come to us over winter time.
So the winter walk was started in autumn of 2013, is when we did the first bed, we planted the first bed up, and it sort of evolved from there. We've had lots more money put into it, which is great, and it now goes around an entire loop of 7 acres, which the visitors can enjoy at their leisure. So we've got things there, we've got cornice, which is the dogwoods for winter stem colour, we've got salix, which is willows for winter stem colour as well. We have lots of lovely hammer mellis, which is the witch hazels. We also have hellebores, lots of conifers. We're trying to make conifers a bit more fashionable again, so there's lots of lovely conifers that people can come and see. We've also got Sarcococca for scent and Daphne's as well for scent as well. So it's really, really nice. And we have just planted 100 Edgeworthias as well, which is well worth coming to see. They're not flowering yet, they're just in bud, but they will very soon be flowering and they're going to look stunning. And they also have a nice scent as well.
And it's all set amongst with a huge pond nearby, so it just sets off those winter stems absolutely perfectly, doesn't it?
It does, you're right. They're around the main lake on 7 acres and you get lovely views across, and when the sun's shining like it is today, it just sets the colour off beautifully. So yeah, absolutely lovely.
The long shadows. And what are the key jobs that are coming up for your team this winter time?
So we've just sort of finished our cutting back on the landscape and all that sort of thing. We're now starting mulching, really. So we're going to be putting down lots of lovely mulch to try and help with our annual weeds in the summer. And then we will be doing the cutback of the winter stems. We'll be doing that sort of late March, April time, where we just cut them all back down to a few buds, which then means they'll keep their lovely bright colour for next year. When they regrow, they'll be nice and bright again for next year. So
maybe you could tell us a bit more about the pruning of the cornice, because I've had questions about that, and people say that if they keep pruning down low, we are supposed to prune just within a few buds of the previous year's growth, the plants are just going to get taller and taller because you're always just pruning within a couple of buds of the previous year's growth. Will they tolerate being cut much, much lower into the old growth and starting again?
Well, the way we do ours is when you plant a cornice or a salix, you leave it, don't prune it the first year after planting, leave it for a year or two, depending on how it's establishing. Let the roots get established first before you cut all the top growth off, otherwise it won't be very happy. And then when you come around to pruning it, take it back to a nice framework. So you do want to take it fairly low, but you want to leave a framework of stems so there's still buds there for new growth to come from. And then, yeah, in the following years, do still take it down just to a couple of buds. It will eventually get taller and woodier, but after that time, when it gets really tall, established and woody, you might look at replacing it anyway. But to be honest, a lot of ours have been in for quite some time and they're still looking lovely, still at a reasonable size. It's just important after pruning as well to make sure we give ours a good feed. We put some general purpose fertiliser around it, and a nice mulch as well, just helps keep the water in, stops them getting too stressed in the hot dry summers as well.
Yeah, they look absolutely fantastic.
So we've moved around now on the winter walk, so we're by our bed that contains 100 Edgeworthias, and we're just having a look at them, and they're quite curious growing things. They sort of have pale brown stems which sort of come up from quite various different places from the base. They sort of intertwine with each other and look quite interesting, especially en masse. And they've got these lovely sort of creamy white flower buds that are just drooping down waiting to open, and they'll start opening sort of end of January time, and they're going to open to a nice yellow colour, and they have a nice lemony scent as well. So hopefully again on this mass they're going to fill the air on this back path where we're standing, and people should be able to smell it from quite some distance away and then come and look at them up close.
So Verity, is there anything else we can be looking forward to over the next month or so?
Well, we were very busy this autumn planting lots of lovely bulbs, and hopefully one of the highlights of those will be some Iris hystroides types, so we can go up and have a look at those.
Fantastic. So this is Iris hystroides?
This is Iris hystroides, and we've got two types in here. We've got Palm Springs and we've got one called Finola as well. And these are going to be lovely. The Finola is white, and I think Palm Springs is a sort of a dark purpley blue colour, and they should look really lovely when they come into flower. So they're just only poking up above the ground now, but until February, and they should come out looking lovely, and they should be lovely deep colours, say like little gems underneath all the hamamelis here, so they should look really, really nice. And we've also planted lots of crocus as well, generally around and about on the winter walk, so well worth coming to have a look at all the bulbs that will be coming out shortly.
And is the iris, is that one that will come back quite happily as a perennial?
The hystroides types is one that I've been told is more reliable at perennial flowering over the reticulata ones, so we hold out good hope for this one, yeah, in its perennial behaviour.
When did they go in originally, these bulbs?
So all of these bulbs that we've just been talking about all went in this autumn, and altogether, irises and crocuses, all the bulbs we planted this year came to about 70,000 bulbs.
Wow.
And we had all our team out here planting and volunteers as well. It did take us several weeks to put them all in, but I'm hoping, fingers crossed, they're put on a lovely display when they actually come into flower.
Looking forward to that.
Jenny Bowden speaking to Gemma Neach, leader of the formal garden team, about some of the winter highlights here at RHS Garden Wisley. There are plenty of other wonderful winter events and attractions at our other three RHS gardens: Hyde Hall in Essex, Rosemore in Devon, and Harlow Carr in North Yorkshire. We've got everything from willow weaving to woodland walks and pruning masterclasses. For more details, see rhs.org.uk/event search. And finally, ponds. Water is, of course, a key resource in any garden, and a carefully designed pond can be an attractive addition to any garden. It enables you to explore the vast range of water plants available and will attract a whole range of wildlife and birds to your plot. Now is the perfect time of year to plan a pond. We spoke to Bernard Boardman about the benefits a pond can bring and about how to go about designing and building one to suit you.
So yeah, Bernard, lots of people have ponds in their gardens. Some don't have them yet. There's usually room for a pond in a garden. Why would we bother?
Well, I just think they add another dimension. There are the obvious benefits, you know, to wildlife, dragonflies and damselflies darting around. It will encourage small insects, so there'll be animals attracted that you probably never see, like bats.
And I think what's so amazing is how quickly creatures move in. If you do put a pond in, they'll find you within days.
Yes.
And when I put one in, dragonflies were the first to come and visit. So if you're convinced and inspired, what kind of things do you need to consider if you do want to install a pond?
Space obviously will dictate how big your pond's going to be. I always tell people to have the biggest pond they possibly can, because the bigger the pond, the easier it is to vary the depths.
So what do you think the optimum depth is for a healthy pond?
You're really looking at something about 60 centimetres, a couple of feet. If you want to keep fish, you need to go deeper.
Obviously, you're limited by the space you've got available, but should they be in sun or shade?
A bit of shade is good, because you want to have cool parts of the pond, little bits where it will be a cooler area for fish or insects to go into. And also, if the pond gets too hot, you're going to have more problems with algae and excessive weed growth. I would try and avoid full sun. I would also try and avoid very windy spots. I've had experience of ponds where the wind has gone across it, and you go home and you think your pond sprung a leak, and it's a hot day and the wind just sucks the water out of it. You lose so much through evaporation.
Is this a good time of year to be building a pond?
I think it's a great time of year to be building a pond, because if you build your pond during the winter months, you've got plenty of time to do it, and then you've also straight into the excitement of planting your new pond up in the spring, and that's when the nurseries are going to be getting their new stocks in.
Okay, so what do we have to do?
Well, mostly you have to dig holes. But of course you don't have to dig it. You can build a pond sort of above ground. You can build a wall and enclose your pond in it. You might want to sit on the edge of it. The best liners are butyl plastics. They're very, very flexible, and you can work in all your different levels. You do need to be very careful that you haven't got stones or anything sharp underneath the pond, so put plenty of lining material underneath it if you're using a liner.
Using tap water to fill it, or some people say you're supposed to start off with a bucket of somebody else's pond water.
If you can get hold of a bucket full of somebody else's pond, that's great, because there'll be all sorts of microorganisms in there that will eventually populate your pond. It just speeds things up a bit. If you'll have to fill your pond with tap water, leave it for a day or two before you add anything to it. I always like to try and collect rainwater. So if you've got water butts somewhere, use that water. It's always better.
People sometimes like to make ponds out of barrels. Obviously, that's not a very big space, so could you suggest a selection of plants that won't overshadow it, that won't get too out of hand too quickly in a small container like that?
There are lots of water lilies now that are suited. So a few a small water lily, some iris, maybe one or two reeds, water forget-me-nots that'll run around. They'll fill it quite quickly. There's lots and lots of information out there. Just have fun doing it, looking for it.
And people are often quite concerned about safety around ponds. Are there any measures we can take to make sure our ponds are safe for children and animals?
Most animals will be quite safe around a pond. Cats and dogs know how to behave around water. I suppose our biggest worries are children. What I would say is that you should get your family involved right from the start. Kids love getting dirty, so let them help mum and dad make the pond. If they're involved right from the start, they will understand your pond. Make sure there's a big shallow margin. If somebody does have a mishap and falls over, they're not straight into deep water. And just enjoy the pond, get everybody involved in it, and let them understand the dangers and enjoy the wildlife, enjoy the plants. Encourage people to sit by the pond and listen to it. Watch the light playing, watch the dragonflies. Just enjoy it. Don't be frightened of it.
As you say, you can have ponds above ground, and that includes some of the smaller kind of containers. Could you tell us a bit more about what you can use to make a pond out of?
Oh, a plastic bowl. You know, you leave a bowl full of water out there and you'll have beetles in it by the end of the day. Anybody that's left a paddling pool out overnight will be astonished by what's built up in there. So you can go from the tiniest bowl to your whole garden full of pond. There are no limits.
Bernard Boardman from the Wisley Garden Team. As always, you can find more information about ponds and aquatic plants on the RHS website. That's all we have time for in this edition. Remember, you can still download our special December 2016 edition of the RHS Members Podcast, which we made available to everyone, RHS members or not. It features in-depth horticultural guidance and an inspirational interview with Baroness Floella Benjamin, the newly appointed RHS Ambassador for Young People and Communities. That special programme is available to download for free from iTunes and from the RHS website. We'll be back in a fortnight. For now, from me, Tony Dickerson, and all the RHS podcast team, goodbye.